Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, James Jones, and it is March 22nd, 2018. Today, we are recording episode 564 of this podcast. I'm joined today by Mr. Guillaume Vaillet.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going all right. Yourself?
Pretty good.
I'm also joined today by Mr. Greg Leahy.
Oi, oi, everyone.
John Lindemann is still at work. It's pretty late, too, so that's kind of sad, but hopefully he'll be joining us for the second half. But he tapped out for new business. Lord knows what he planned to play. Pray for us. But instead, we're going to soldier on without him. And Greg and I have both been hitting up WiiWare stuff. So as a reminder, when you are hearing this episode, if you listen to it the day it comes out, there is precious little time to add WiiWare credit. Like a day. Like 27th. So if you want to add points, freaking do it now. And if you don't listen to the show when it comes out, A, shame on you. And B, it's too late. You should listen sooner. You should make listening to this your priority every Sunday night before you go to bed. In fact, listen to it as you go to sleep so we can give you sweet dreams of Radio Free Nintendo. But I am going to start the show with a nightmare in my head now because I've thought about John being the last thing I hear before I go to sleep, and I don't want that. So I've been playing Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles: My Life as a Dark Lord. In fact, I just streamed like 2 hours of it.
Huh.
So first off, preface. It is, of course, the sequel. It is a proper sequel, although it is a completely different genre, to my favorite piece of WiiWare software, which also happened to be a launch game. Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles: My Life as a King, which I've talked about on this show at least 3 times. And unlike that game was about, I don't know what you'd call it, a preparation game, a planning game. But basically you built the town and you had to try to arrange the town in the right way to allow your heroes access to material and shops and stuff so they could prep for quests that you then set out for them. Because if they spent too long in the morning prepping for quests, they'd have to come back before they finished them and stuff like that. So it's all about the preparation. And this is sort of the opposite. So while you're sending quests off to attack monster dens in that game, this game is you are a demon, and she is responsible for protecting the last monster den following the events of My Life as a King. And she is going around the world with her flying monster tower to basically make everyone afraid of her. And it's not going well. So it's a tower defense game. In the most literal sense, it is a tower defense game. It is the world's most literal tower defense game. Because you have a tower, and there are heroes coming up and trying to scale it, and so you add floors to your tower and then fill them with traps and monsters. That's it. That's the game. And so if you try to climb, a floor has some kind of item in it, depending on what type of floor it is. So I'm only a little ways in. So one of them is like a spike ball trap. And then another floor is they call it a dresser. I don't, it's a wardrobe for one. But two, basically what it does is it buffs the units that you put in it, the monsters, so they take less damage. Whereas a spike trap has a cooldown, but when the cooldown fills up, it hits enemies that are in that room. Each floor can only have one enemy at a time, and they're only in there for a fixed amount of time, assuming there are monsters there to fight. If there are no monsters, they just cruise right through that floor. If there's already someone engaged in that floor, another hero, they just pass right through it. So it's not just a matter of having enough monsters to kill anything that comes up the tower. It's a matter of having enough floors with enough things to slow them down. Because what I found fairly early in the game is that I can deal with Clavat swordsmen. They're pretty easy to deal with. They're weak to physical and magic. And I had a lot of physical. In fact, you start the game with only physical monsters. So it was easy enough. Just build enough floors and you'll win. When they start coming in twos and threes, obviously that means only one of them stops at each floor, then somebody stops at the next floor, and then somebody finally stops at the third floor. And since your tower can only be 5 stories tall at the beginning, that's actually really scary, because that means 3 of your 5 floors are full, and if the first floor, the guy defending or attacking the first floor finishes up, he'll climb to the second. which already is occupied. Now, usually that person, the second, is clearing out at the same time, so it's fine, and they're all just passed. They all just end up moving up one floor. But it's possible that he may bypass and make it to the next floor. And then the person that was on the floor that he just bypassed climbs and misses the floor that he landed on. So that guy's on floor 4 now instead of floor 3. So you can't just sort of build a tower and fill it with crap because they'll bypass you. So you have to buy upgrades to make the tower taller or to let you make it taller. And you have to find the right combination of enemies to slow down units and kill them quickly so you don't create that backlog of heroes to let them sort of leapfrog huge portions of the tower. This was all going well until the first Yuke showed up, which, if you're not familiar with the Crystal Chronicles lore, they're these weird-looking human-esque creatures that are super thin and long and wear a helmet so you can never see their face. They are magic specialists, and in this game, they are black mages. And unlike the other enemies I fought so far who attack one of the monsters on your floor, they attack all of the monsters on your floor. On each floor, they hit everybody in it. And they're strong against physical attacks, and so when you first encounter them, the game only has given you physical attackers. So they just cruised through my tower, and ultimately I just got them through attrition. But as the game goes on, and you start getting more complex and more large groups of units, this becomes a real issue. And so the game starts introducing new enemies and new floor types, or new monsters and new floor types, specifically to deal with these scenarios. So it became a matter of trying to build what I was referring to on the stream as Yuke traps, because they're vulnerable to ranged units, which in this game is a scorpion. So building a room with the shield unit, the dresser, to keep the scorpion safe from damage, and then maxing out the number of scorpions you can put in there, which with that particular floor configuration is 2, and then upgrading them to their as much as I can. That was enough to really put a hurt on one of these Yukes, and if I had another floor right behind it that was the same thing, it would kill them. But then the game introduced another enemy type and immediately brought them in waves that aren't very vulnerable to ranged units. In fact, they're basically invulnerable to ranged units. And they're weak to physical units, which I had some at the base to deal with the clavats earlier, but I had mostly stopped building those in the higher floors because the clavats weren't getting there. And the clavats are weak to ranged units as well. Or not weak. They're not weak to anything. They're just average against everything. So these guys just cruised through the top floors. So I had to end up building more floors quickly of physical units, which took a beating on them at the bottom, to try to stop them at the top. So there's like this weird chess game going on with what the enemy's throwing at you and what you need to have. It just seems like there's a bunch of different types of monsters you can get, because I ended up doing a side mission that unlocks a new monster type. That's this like cute little squirrel looking thing with claws, but it doesn't do any damage. It basically is the weakest thing in the game. It attacks a lot, but it's very, very weak. And so depending on your performance in each stage, you get money that you can use to upgrade your units or upgrade your tower. And it looks like the thing with these are, they're like the joke character in a Fire Emblem game. They're useless until you max upgrade them, and then they're all destroying. So I can grind out more crystals or whatever they call it to make that thing stronger. But, you know, I'll have to just work my way through it. It's pretty good. And now it has performance issues, which is hilarious that it's a tower defense game that's just absolutely grinding on a Wii U.
But it looks pretty good.
It looks pretty good. I think My Life as a King looks better. Because all these assets are pretty small in this game, but it doesn't look like they adjusted the resources that much. So there's a weird kind of crush on a lot of the sprites. Or not the sprites, on the models, like a texture crush. But yeah, it's neat. It's a neat idea. It's not an unmissable game, which is good for you if you haven't bought it. I still think it's a neat extension on the world of My Life as a King. From what I have seen, it's not as sophisticated a game or as neatly featured. It doesn't do all the cool stuff that game does.
Yeah, I have not played My Life as a King, but I played My Life as a Dark Lord back when it came out. And I remember really enjoying it. But I do remember thinking, usually I would play a stage once, the game would kick my ass at least a few times. And every time, like, I could figure out, like, okay, this is what I needed to do. And so I do it the next time, and eventually I would win, and it would often feel like there was one solution, you know? Like, it often feel like it was more of a puzzle than a strategy game.
Yeah, I can see that. I've only lost once, and that was in the second bonus mission where they're throwing, like, waves of three level eights at me, and I can only max my characters out at level two.
Right.
And it was immediately apparent I'm not supposed to be playing this yet. Hmm. But I definitely struggled in that first bonus mission. And in fact, I think I only won by the absolute skin of my teeth. I was building floors literally one floor above the enemy. Like, just frantically building floors and then running out of money and waiting for something to die so I could populate them with an enemy just to slow them down. But yeah, there's definitely a certain amount of, like, the game wants you to do something here to deal with this enemy, because while the base Clavat swordsmen are just kind of, like, average, and there's no weakness strength thing going on, so you don't really have to worry about them too much. Once the game introduces Black Mage and the Silkies, who are really weak to physical, but not to anything else. Like, once it introduces them, you have to have a solution for them, because your normal floors will not do it. But their counterpart will just walk right through that floor. So you have to have something to deal with them as well. But you have a fixed number of floors you can deal with. And there's this weird trade-off of, like, do I try to build this hybrid floor that will at least do the business, so when they're stopped on every floor, they'll at least take some damage? Or do I try to build floors devoted entirely towards one type of enemy, knowing that they're going to be completely useless against another type of enemy?
Right.
And I've been doing a lot of the hybrid. It's like hybrid, and then a specialty floor, hybrid, specialty floor for a different enemy. Like, just trying to keep damage going, trying to keep damage moving on every floor. Because the problem is, if you try to build specialty floors, there's a real good chance that the unit you built it for will just bypass it, because there'll be somebody there already. And you can't predict that. Like, that's just going to happen. And so you can't, there's a fixed number of floors and there's a fixed amount of money, so you can't just build infinite floors to dealing with specific enemies. You have to try to economize on that. So it's been building floors designed to deal with two types of enemies and putting them in series. So I know that you're going to get stopped on at least one of these damn things. But that does cause some real moments of just pure panic when you don't have a floor. You're looking at the tower. They just got past the last floor that's really dangerous to them. And you're like, oh, fuck, I got to make another floor. Oh, shit, I don't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's often like by the skin of your teeth that you slay a hero and get some money or mana, or I can't remember.
Right.
And then, yeah
they you call can it do bad the thing points that you, or something like that.
Right. Yeah, if you're listening to this in the future where you can't purchase this and you feel like you've been missing out, there's a Castle Doombad on phones that is kind of similar. You've got the same kind of gameplay of building well, actually, it's very similar, because I think that you're playing as the villain, building a tower with various floors, trying to stop heroes with various types of traps and monsters. So if you want something like that, then Castle Doombad, that was by Adult Swim, I think.
Yeah, and there's way, way back in 2000, like the early 2000s, and I think there's been sequels to it since then, there's a strategy game called Evil Genius where that's a lot of the same thing. You build your evil lair, but you also do things like take over the world plans out of your lairs. The lair is for when basically your super spies show up to try to shut you down. I got through the first chapter and most of the second chapter of My Life as a Dark Lord so far. The Chime fight scared the absolute shit out of me, because Chime is the assistant from My Life as a King. And she rolls up there as a level 10. And you're like, you're level 1 everything. And it's pure attrition, because she takes no damage, or almost no damage. And it's just a matter of grinding off her health in tiny little slivers until such a point that she goes down. It is upsettingly scary. I think I got her on the very last floor. But yeah, it's a neat game, and Square Enix made a couple good WiiWare games. Like, they were in there. You know, I never played the Bearsworth games besides at an E3 experience. And of course, they made Final Fantasy The After Years, which I haven't played, although that came out with some other stuff. But like, they were really in there. And it's kind of amazing that none of their WiiWare games have made an appearance, except for The After Years, have made an appearance anywhere else, that they've just sort of let them go.
Right, The After Years was originally a phone game, right?
Yeah, I think it showed up a few other places since then, too.
Right, but not an iPhone game, like really, like...
Like a Docomo phone.
Yeah.
I would like to see them do a remake of the My Life games and put them out on stuff. I think they would be really neat. Now, it'd probably have to be on Switch, because there seems to be some kind of Crystal Chronicles Nintendo thing. I don't know if it's just branding or if it just legitimately has to be on there, because I know Nintendo was involved in funding that first one. But yeah, I mean, I would certainly buy those games again if you put them out on Switch. They'd be neat little eShop games. I think they'd probably be relatively well received, especially because it's been a long freaking time, and downloadable games are much more, you know, mass market than they were then. And also, the Wii Shop was fucking atrocious. So. You know, discoverability would certainly be better now.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Square Enix has just forgotten the Crystal Chronicles franchise. It's been a while since we got the last one, which was that Wii DS one, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know. They're weird, and I don't really understand them. And Square also owns Taito, and so recently, I think that Space Invaders Extreme made it to PC, but nothing else. And nope. It's just like, come on, put that on PlayStation 4 or on Switch. Like, oof. I don't know.
Taito's thing is different, though, and they're all weird.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think the last game was Echoes of Time, which was the DS game that also went to Wii and looked like a DS game on a disc.
Right.
It's awesome. I've had multiple people write into the show telling me I need to get Ring of Fates, which is a DS RPG in the Crystal Chronicles franchise.
Is that the one that I talked about on this show? I can send you a copy.
Don't even remember. Is it an actual RPG and not a multiplayer thing?
Well, they both have a multiplayer component. I think I played it with Karen, and I didn't realize that it was mainly a single player game, and that the co-op thing was more on the side. So I guess I can send you one copy of that, and I'm gonna start playing the other one that's actually good, Rings of Fate, with Karen.
Yeah, I think Rings of Fate is the one in question. Is the one that's an actual... Yeah, that's the one that's an actual, like, story-driven RPG versus
okay.
The
well,
other one.
At some point, like, Squaresoft had some sort of sale on their website, and I decided to get, like, two copies of each of those games. So
Yeah, Echoes of Time is the bad one.
Ah.
Yeah, that's the one that people don't think is very good. But it's... Yeah, I mean, it's a neat franchise that Square Enix made at some point and then seems to have just forgotten. It's been a while. Crystal Bears might have been... We need a retroactive on Crystal Bears.
We do. God. I've got my copy ready.
I didn't review it because Square Enix sent us the copy like a week after the game came out and Neil bought it and did a review. But I have the review copy. And I remember
it's the game that came out like what, the 24th or the 26th of December?
Yeah, it came
out the 26th of December. Yes.
Oh.
And
I think that was I think Nintendo did the same thing to Captain Toad over here on Wii U. So
nice.
You know.
It's entirely possible that it got to us after it came out because they sent it at the end of December before shipping companies had figured out that Amazon was going to wreck their shit for a month. My enduring memories of Crystal Chronicles, the Crystal Bears, is finding it at E3 and then reporting on the recordings for this show on this feed way back in 2006, probably. Or excuse me, 2009.
Yeah, it was announced in 2006.
Yeah, 2009.
Because it was one of the things that was shown really early with Wii,
right.
Wasn't it? But
yes.
It took a long time to show up, presumably for development hell reasons. But
yeah. Is me announcing on the podcast from the hotel room, I have no idea what this game is, and I just played it for 40 minutes. And then my thoughts are probably recorded on this show, where I also think I have no idea what this game is.
Unfortunately, the only thing I can really remember and you know, make whatever interpretations of this as you will, is you talking about the butt bumping minigame.
I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, we might need to look at this one. Like,
Yeah,
this
it
one.
sounds really compelling.
It's just so weird. It's like one of those things in my memory. I'm like, what the fuck was that game? There's very few games as I'm playing them, I just think to myself, what the fuck are you?
Something about telekinetic powers.
Yeah, something. I think the main character's name is Lael. He has a gem on his face, and there's some really nice cutscenes in there. And I don't remember much else. I remember there's a scene on a boat where he jumps off it, an airboat, and then he lands on another airboat, and the guy who was chasing him shakes his fist and is mad. Like, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much all I remember. I remember the map was terrible. All right, we need to move on. Save me from this conversation about the crystal bears. Greg.
Well, yeah, one thing about terrible maps, I've been playing a little bit of Xenoblade 2 after the patch, the latest update, where the map is still bad, but
Yes.
it does still it has the icons on it now when you do the overlay while you're
Oh.
actually exploring, which in general is not a big deal or anything, but I did find it a little bit helpful for some of those field skill things. The icons that are like, probably like treasure chests I hadn't opened yet. And, just sometimes the map is so bad that just like, that big the map view translating where that icon was to where it actually was on the field was not as easy as it should have been. So
God.
having it show up, stay up on the overlay as well was actually surprisingly helpful. But yeah, I haven't done New Game Plus or anything like that yet. I've just still got loads of quests I haven't done.
There was a quest I found, so on the iteration of the map before this one, where the quest is on a promontory out in the middle of the first continent you're on. I'm blanking on its name now.
All right, yeah, I'm with you.
Gourmont. And it took me 2 hours to piece together from that map where the fuck that quest actually was. I sent mercenaries off to do missions, and they came back before I found the way.
Oh
It's
dear.
so bad. And that's not even the map at that point. That's just navigating that stage is borderline impossible. And it's like a quest that you're only going to see if you've done like 120 hours of the game, because it's like the end of a quest tree that also requires you have like maxed out your relationship with a couple different blades. And so like nobody's writing online how to solve this. In fact, the only reference I found was one other person going, "I don't know how to get there." I'm like, oh, damn it.
No, there's a few. There's been a few times of me just doing run-of-the-mill kind of stuff where you see a point in the map and it's like, yeah, I probably know where that is,
Yeah.
and then you fumble around for ages, not know where it is. But yeah, it's a little better now, but fundamentally, it's still pretty similar. So yeah, not much to kind of it wasn't it kind of the fact that it was an update kind of brought me back to it for a little bit, but at the same time I haven't really like actually kind of enjoyed the fruits of the update into because like I said, I've got a few too many things left to do before I'd want to go to the new game plus. I don't know about you. I think
Did
you even though I think we played it at this point for pretty much the same amount of time, I think you've probably got a lot more stuff done than I did.
I was min-maxing my quest execution at some point. I don't know. Did you I'm trying to decide if I want a new game. Like, New Game Plusing that game terrifies me, even though there is a bunch of stuff you get in New Game Plus. And
Yeah.
also you keep your level, which would make the beginning of that game so ridiculous.
Also, I mean, but also, I do feel like kind of satisfying from the point of view, like, you probably fantasized about speeding combat up,
Right.
and it will do that.
There's a quest really early where you run away from one of the giant dinosaurs, and it's just like, what happens if I just kill it? Like, what
Yeah.
happens if at the very beginning I just kill that thing? There must be a resolution state on that quest where Rex just murks it, as opposed to running off. I wonder what that resolution is. Because I think I ended up... you know what? No, I think I killed... I think I let that quest sit because I didn't realize you're supposed to run away to clear it. And I think I killed him anyway at the very end. Like, I just hid from him every time I went through Gormont for like 60 hours. And then I just killed him. And then somebody else is like, you're supposed to run from him. And then the quest continues. I'm like, you're not supposed to just keep fighting until you die? No. Oh. Well, I'm stupid then. Oh, well. But, so what have you been playing then?
Yeah, well, other than that, I've been putting more hours into a bunch of games that I've had for a while on Switch. There's a big sale on here that there's some pretty healthy reductions on things. I'll probably get some more stuff. Although it's the kind of sale that's almost paralyzing because there's quite a few enticing options, but I'm not going to get them all. So it's like, what's really the best value? But yeah, that'll probably generate some new business in the coming weeks. But yeah, I've naturally, with the deadline approaching as we record this on the 26th for the add-in, the credit, I've been thinking about it. I mean, probably what I'm going to do, because I usually just defer action if possible, is just put some credit on, you know, and
yeah,
actually,
that's what I did today.
Yeah, just make the decision.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead, please.
I kind of went through like every page of WiiWare and just wrote down like, do I like all the titles that I didn't own that I might be interested in, and I think I ended up just with like Rainbow Islands and I don't know, like some other thing. Like I think I bought everything. I've got all the WiiWare.
Right,
all of it. You bought it all.
Yeah, that's the thing.
No,
see,
if you're
going
to say
always...
you got it, you need to have it all. You need to have that Halloween greeting card one that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, no, that's the thing.
The
I
Christmas
just,
one.
Click through. Yeah, no.
Yeah, see, I had a much more kind of. I think I was a bit more sort of slack about getting Wii U. I probably was more kind of biased towards the Japanese virtual console in terms of loading stuff up on one of my Wiis at the time. So, you know, I downloaded a bunch of demos, you know, and decided to play through those. One of them was Fluidity, or Hydra Venture, as it's called here. Which, you know, was very well thought of at the time, but I never did get round to it. And I thought, well, I could at least play the demo now and kind of see, you know, what I think about that. You know, you could see the appeal with the whole concept is you kind of controlling this, well, sort of a storybook essentially, but like water's like magically flowing within it, you know, and you have to kind of, you tilt the controller to make the water run down through these obstacle courses, and the water can jump for some reason by flicking the remote, and you get powers eventually, like the kind of gather to a, you know, compress to a sort of a tight ball, or later on there's like freezing and becoming a cloud and stuff like this. But you know, fundamentally it does seem really quite interesting, but I guess probably the toughest thing kind of about it now, the prospect of it, is you could kind of feel the controls kind of losing their, you know, kind of losing their kind of center at some point, you know, where like you feel like, yeah, I'm having to tilt it way further in one direction now to kind of get the same result than I did about 5-10 minutes ago, which I guess is just something that was apt to happen with it. Although I think that was pretty much the basic, you know, that was the basic Wii Remote technology that was based on at that point. I don't know whether it would have been any better with Motion Plus. And of course, the thing with Motion Plus is they were always very conscious of the need to recalibrate.
Right.
So, you know, in that sense, it might have been, better if it had been on that later technology. And again, the other thing about it is kind of the pacing early on, and there's a whole kind of thing as it's teaching you, you know, the sort of fundamentals of the game about like making sure that you pool the water properly. So it's like, okay, you know, because you don't want to like lose water as you're going through these kind of sinuous pathways, because then you'll have less to kind of help you as you do these various sort of tasks. So, you know, it make sure to tell you to kind of let all the water kind of gather in these sort of areas that are left aside to pool and all that. And that's, you know, it makes sense, but I wonder how much it would kind of, the pace does seem a little bit kind of slow, as you'd imagine, you know, kind of a somewhat of a exploratory platformer where you're controlling, you're quite convincing in some ways physics-based water bodies, you know, like
sure.
A lot of the appeal in a way is the fact that it's kind of indirect control in a sense, you know, achieving sort of kind of platformish tasks with, you know, something that is not anything like a traditional platform character. So, you know, like I said, I think that's, you know, really kind of intrinsic to the game. But I do, I mean, with these powers that you gather later on, I can imagine that, you know, you're going to get more and more capable, and it's probably not a huge deal. But, you know, it does seem cool, and you know, the interesting part about it is that, you know, while this game does not exist in another form, it did get a sequel on 3DS, which I think preserved the name in dichotomy across the regions. I think they still hadn't got the memo yet. It's like, yeah, the internet's been a global thing for quite a while now. You might just want to keep the same name. So people know what's being talked about, but yeah, I haven't played that either. But I think, you know, one of the sort of observations about that was that it was more sort of discrete level based, rather than this kind of slightly Mario 64 kind of structure of the original, where, you know, there's these rainbow sort of drops that you can collect, that if you want, you can got some sort of freedom over what order you kind of tackle them in, and then once you've collected a certain amount, it'll open up another portion of an environment to play in and all that kind of thing, whereas it was more sort of linear and orthodox in the sequel. And it's kind of similar with one of the other demos I played, which was Jet Rocket by Shinen. I've never been entirely clear on the proper way to say the developer's name, but that's the people behind Fast, the racing series, which also began on WiiWare, didn't it?
Yep.
Before it kind of moved on.
Fast.
But yeah, before we got to all the, yeah, the world on Wii U, and then Remix came with Switch early on. But yeah, with Jet Rocket, which is, you kind of at the time was mostly notable for being somebody kind of attempted to do a 3D platformer at a time where, yeah, not many people were, other than Nintendo doing the Galaxy games or whatever. You know, it does look nice. You know, especially given the paltry size of memory available to WiiWare, and you know, just play the demo, you go through kind of introductory stage that'll definitely make you think a bit of Mario Sunshine because of the setting. Being kind of coastal, and you know, as you might imagine from the name of the game, Jet Rocket, you've got a rocket pack, which is you know, not unlike having the jetpack sort of nozzle on the Flood in Mario Sunshine, but it's also this kind of a thing that's very much like a cross between a homing attack in a 3D Sonic game and a sort of a butt stomp in Mario 64, which is shake based. Again, you know, this was very much of the time. You know, Galaxy had shake based things in it. With this, it kind of, yeah, the physics kind of took a little bit of getting used to, the jump physics, and then the timing of, like, I guess you have to wait for when your jump is descending before you can initiate this kind of butt stompy kind of thing. But you know, you get used to it pretty quickly in the demo, and it seemed, you know, quite you know, a capable 3D platformer. But the interesting thing about that is that also had, you know, kind of continued on into 3DS with as a sequel on the eShop there. But again, it kind of went away from what it was on WiiWare. It has like side-scrolling levels, and, you know, kind of mixes a bunch of sort of different styles of challenges together, rather than just being the 3D platformer kind of thing. Which again, I have no idea, you know, how much sort of the merits of the different games kind of stack up. But I imagine, you know, probably people more hungry for a 3D platformer that arguably then like something that mixes genres, because it has been kind of underserved. I feel like that area, because I guess to a large extent, of developers have found it difficult to do them well. To be fair, and difficult to make them very successful.
Well, just because Jet Rocket doesn't really, it stays kind of a platformer throughout, doesn't mean that they're doing it well.
Yeah, I wonder. I said it seems, as you'd expect from the developer showing it, the technically it seems like they're doing a bang up job for what they're working with on WiiWare, but design wise, it's harder to judge just from the demo and all that. And so, the intriguing, and it's kind of interesting that these are games that had some kind of legacy. Moving forward onto Nintendo's future digital platforms, but not the kind of not really one where they kind of stayed intact. Like I guess it's interesting, isn't it? Once you escape the really severe restrictions of WiiWare, how do you kind of take it from there with a game? And I guess so in that sense, it's kind of natural that they might change a fair bit. Yeah, because you weren't dealing with nearly the same kind of issues and restrictions on the early days of the 3DS eShop that you were then on WiiWare. So I guess it's not a surprise in that sense. But I mean, there's been a number of things that got a start on that area that have kind of gone on and been really quite big. You think of, obviously, of BitTrip Games being one of the biggest kind of things, and Runner 3's coming in May, I guess, and I'm very much looking forward to that. There is a legacy there. It's not for the service. It's not all kind of there was a lot of things that held it back from being, could have been more than it was, arguably. But there's some good stuff, and I'm definitely going to set aside some credit and download some games at a future date, because there will be a whole year once the credit's on there to decide what to do with that money. So I'll probably just defer a little bit longer.
Just don't forget, because I suspect that Nintendo won't be quite as eager to tell you about it as they were about being able to stop adding money.
That's a fair point.
Just like, oh yeah, by the way, yesterday was the last day you could have spent that money that we had you at. Sorry. Guillaume.
Yeah, so last week I said that I made a cool 65 cents off getting L.A. Noire from the library. That's
Thief.
probably
Thief.
well, no one claimed it. I don't know, maybe people can keep claiming it. Like I've seen some people try to claim the coins on two separate switches, but that were on the same family My Nintendo account or something, and that didn't work. But I kind of wonder, because I've been able to redeem the coins from all those games that I've gotten from the library, and I don't know. Maybe I am the only person who cares. I really don't know. But anyway, that 65 cents is probably the major positive that I'm gonna get out of taking out L.A. Noire from the library. I'm not really a fan. I've played a bunch of open world games, but mostly my preference lies with the superhero ones, usually, that let you, at the very least, climb buildings, if not jump over them or fly over them. And so I really liked Infamous and Infamous 2, which I talked about on this podcast, I think. It was that game with the roof couches, set in not New Orleans. And those were pretty good. And I mean, Hulk Ultimate Destruction on GameCube, and I don't know. Like, so I'm not against open world games, and my favorite Rockstar game that I played out of all three of them is Bully. I've also played GTA 4, and I was not a fan, and now I've played some of L.A. Noire, and I don't think I'm gonna keep playing.
So having played all of the games you just mentioned, I will say one thing about L.A. Noire. And I think that And this is largely, I think, the fault of Rockstar's marketing. Like, they marketed it, their marketing was bipolar. A lot of it, they marketed it like a, like the film noir that it was, you know, it was coming off of.
Mm-hmm.
And that marketing was pretty accurate to what this game is. But then they would talk about it like it's, oh, we went and made a GTA in the late 40s, but it's not. This game is open world insofar as there is an open world and you can drive around in it and do stuff, and that they recreated LA of the late 40s, early 50s. But the game is really hard mission structured. Like, it has mm-hmm. a, you can get off the rail and go do stuff and like go run down crimes and things, but this game is super goddamn long. There's
okay,
no
I'm definitely
reason,
quitting
no,
here.
There's no reason to do that. Like, you can just, if you just play this game's story, that's a full ass game. And it goes places. Like, as a storytelling thing, this game actually does a pretty good job. There's only one, there's like four desks, if I recall correctly, and there's only one where I'm like, I hate this. But like, yeah, when they unfortunately set it up for comparisons to their other games, I think they did it a tremendous disservice.
Well, even taking it as an homage or, you know, a love letter to noir movies, I'm not really enjoying it. I just feel like, yeah, okay, I get it. You saw LA Confidential, and Kevin Spacey was pretty great in that. And I agree, but I don't need to play your video game version of it. Maybe I am being reductive, but it's kind of the gut feeling that I get seeing the lettering that they use and the tone like that they take and the narration. Like, I mean, I haven't seen a ton of noir movies.
LA Confidential is pretty derivative of other stuff.
And I feel like this is kind of derivative of a derivative.
I never really got LA Confidential playing this one. I got a lot of other movies. But ultimately, yeah, if that's your way in, then that's what you're going to pull from. Right. I think I pulled from a lot of the same movies that they themselves are pulling from.
Anyway, I don't feel like... I don't know. Like, maybe I'll go and get those movies that they pull from the library, but I'm going to be returning this game doing so, is basically my point. I just it's not that compelling. I find that the mission structure is, even if you follow the plot, is very much like, okay, get in your car, drive to the crime scene, examine either trash that you pick up or the clue that they want you to find. So, you know, put the clues together. Usually sometimes there might be some sort of a chase scene after a bad guy, or you might have to shoot someone and then like, okay, go back to this other location. And so the gameplay, the action gameplay is very samey and kind of boring. And the other part of the gameplay, which is kind of the interrogation gameplay, I can't wrap my head around. I'm not sure what the game expects from me. Like, so there are three choices. I forget the third one. It's the one where you confront the person you're interrogating with evidence. Like, if you catch them with a lie and you have the evidence that you can show them to tell them, look, I know you're lying. You know, this says you lie, and then you show.
So that's really dumb, because the prompts used to be truth, doubt, and lie. And
right, but lie as in, like, you're doubting. No, you know that they're lying.
Right, lie
doubt
is straight
as
up like...
Doubt as in you're doubting what they're saying.
This is suspicious. And
truth as in you're taking what they're saying as truth.
And the funny thing about it is, like, their faces contorting when you should be pressing them was always really fun to me.
It's weird. It's like some reptile is trying to, you know, hold in gas
It was really impressive early in, like, the mid-360 generation. But yeah, now it's just really funny.
Yeah. Anyway, the options are good cop, bad cop, and, I don't know, or something.
The lie could also just have been called the scream at women button, because pretty much what Cole did when you pressed it.
Wow.
I mean, he does a lot of that in this game. If you get through it, like, he yells at a lot of people, but there's a lot of scenes where, like, there's a woman who is, like, the wife of the victim, And then Cole's yelling at her because now he thinks she's in on it. It's like, what is going on, Cole? I think this game does. This game would have been better if it wasn't an open world game.
Maybe.
I like the world. They did a really impressive job making LA. They did.
It's kind of boring because after kind of giving up on the story, I went and decided, like, okay, I'm going to be a tourist. I'm going to go look at the sites.
Yeah.
And there are monuments that you can go check out, but I find myself not really that interested. I found an art museum. It was very small. I'm guessing that they didn't want to render everything that was in the actual museum.
No.
But I went to the Hollywood sign and I was like, okay, let's go make our way up there. And you can't because that's not part of the game. So that was a little bit frustrating. It was a long drive too. I could have had my... That's the thing. If you want to skip... The open world stuff. You can have your partner drive you, and that skips the whole animation. But it's still kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I mean, there's Team Bondi who made this, notoriously run by a slave driver.
Mm-hmm.
You can see why, because like they put in the work to make LA, and there is a neat, like, I can go wander around thing, but ultimately, as Guillaume's hit it, it doesn't add that much. And all the set piece locations that are really cool. Did you make it to the movie set?
No.
Okay, so there was a silent film, and I'm blanking on what the movie was called. That they built this giant set, and it was just there for like 25 years after the film was shot, because it was so big they just didn't bother to tear it down. And there's like a whole big shootout on that thing because they recreated it, and it's really cool. Like, oh wow, I've seen the movie this is from. It's neat to get to like explore around the set after aging for 20 years. But they took you there because anything that they spent that kind of effort to create, they're gonna take you there so you see it. So their work has meaning. And so they could have cut out all the space in between because they didn't need it.
Like, sure.
There was no reason for it. Like, it was intolerance. That was it. But, like, it's really cool that they put the work in those places and did it. But, like, they didn't need to. Certainly, if they wanted to, they could have just done those places. I like how this game does investigations. Like, talking, like, the right, doing things in the right order as a detective makes sense because you can get more out of your interrogation because you've got more evidence. Or your right. The evidence, Cole doesn't just look at it and go, just junk, and put it down on the table.
I just, the investigation part didn't really work for me because one of my first cases that was not part of the, kind of the tutorial, I don't know. It just kept bugging me. I think that at some point I chose the option, the third option, by mistake, and then I had to pick a piece of evidence to show to the witness, and I knew I didn't have the evidence, and I wanted to back out, but I couldn't.
Right.
So that was frustrating. But there's also the fact that it's not always clear which piece of evidence, and I mean that's part of the challenge, sure, but it just seemed poorly made. There was like this one guy. So one of the first cases that you do is that there's this guy trying to fake his death with his buddy. They buy a hog at the butcher shop or something, and so like they create this crime scene, like the car is all bloody, but you find the receipt for the hog, and so you go talk to the wife, and she's you get vibes from her that it would not be a happy marriage to be married to this woman, and then you go interrogate the drinking buddy of the guy you think has been killed. But at this point, it's very clear that this guy has helped his buddy fake his death.
Yes.
And I don't know, like, very clearly the actor was doing like the shifty gestures, so you could tell that he was lying. And I did have the receipt for the hog, but at this point, the line of questioning was still, I think you did it, even though just a little bit earlier you mentioned the hog receipt to him. So it's as if, like, I don't know, your character, Cole Phelps, still had not picked up the what's was actually going on. But you as a player, you have. But
I mean, it's the Ace Attorney problem.
Yeah, but it's worse here because then if you don't show the right thing when you need to, then you lose that opportunity, that questioning opportunity forever.
Yeah.
Instead of just losing, you know, something in a meter, like you can't just save and go back and, you know, get all your health back. So it was just frustrating, and I it's not something I want to deal with right now. So I don't know. I just gave up on the game.
Yeah, the way the game resolves, if like basically at the end of each mission, the game judges you based on like how close to the perfect case you got. And I don't think there's any where you can just complete. I don't think the game lets you just end state and fail.
Right.
But yeah, you can really flub your way through some of these cases. And at the end, like my favorite is still Homicide with the really intensely Irish boss who just talks about basically smacking Jesus into you constantly. Like when you get your little reports at the end, like, but you didn't get the collar, did you? And it's like, whoa, chief, sorry. I did manage to shoot a bunch of people, though, who were basically running a heroin ring out of a burger stand. So, you know, I didn't arrest anybody, but I did stop the case. And then sometimes you'll do that. I'll be like, good gun work out there. And it's like, all right, cool. Thanks, chief. I'm going to go back to my car now and put my machine gun away.
Yeah, I don't know. I was playing the game, and Karen wasn't really paying attention to the screen, but she was hearing what was happening, and she just kept laughing at the dialogue.
Oh,
and,
it's funny. It is.
Well, yeah, but it's in a bad way. It's not funny on purpose, I don't think.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's pretty cringe-inducing. But anyway, I was not amused. The other game that I've been playing is Tesla versus Lovecraft, which is a twin-stick shooter. Something that I had been waiting for a while now to come up on the Switch. Like, there's a lot of kind of procedurally generated, kind of loot-based twin-stick shooters that have you basically, like, pick up different pieces of loot on the floor, and then, like, at the end of a level, you have to optimize your character and then, you know, try to make it through the next level. What am I thinking of? Neurovoider and stuff like that. I find that there's a lot of those on the Switch, but kind of pure twin stick shooters that are not just Geometry Wars, just slightly different, Please Don't Sue. There's yes. Not a whole lot of those. So Tesla versus Lovecraft is by the makers of Crimson Land, which is a game I played a little bit of on PC ages ago, and I don't really remember it. But I do remember that it was a game that would kind of get into a grind. Basically, like, you're shooting these hordes of enemies coming at you, and as you do so, you level up, you can pick up a perk. I think you could... In Tesla versus Lovecraft, the same thing happens, and you can pick between two random perks that are presented to you. Let's say like 25% higher max HP, or 20% faster shooting. And so you pick the one that you want, and then it's just you keep going, and you hope to make it to the end of a level. And your loadout of perks is going to help you achieve that. And sometimes you can be lucky, and sometimes you're less lucky, but so far I've made it through maybe a third of the game, and the game has been easy enough that I have very seldom died, so I don't know if it's because I got lucky with the perks, or if it's because the game is particularly forgiving initially. Now it's getting a little bit tougher, and I'm hoping that I won't have to grind too much, but that's the... That's kind of the danger with this type of game with me, for me. Like the, I feel like I'm kind of vulnerable to this kind of grindy loop of gameplay where, it's arcade action, and if you keep playing, you might get better, in terms of skills, but also your character is going to level up and is going to get some advantages. So eventually you're going to make it, but you're going to have to keep playing. You're going to have to, you know, try and try again and grind so that to upgrade your character. And even when you're not dying, the levels are short enough, and they hand you unlock after unlock for every short stage that you do, and it kind of gets into this addictive loop that really works on me. But unfortunately, the first night that I played the game, I ended up playing it until past the point where it was fun, and I don't know, like that's kind of a me problem, right? Like, but also the game is designed to create this addiction, I think, and so I guess this is like my warning label that I'm putting on this game. Like, if you recognize yourself, like if you're easily addicted to a video game, maybe you want to stay away from this one. But the next two couple nights that I played through the game, I managed to, you know, put it down before that point, before it got unenjoyable. And it's a good game. Like, it's a good arcade shooter, twin stick shooter, and there's not a ton of variety in the levels, but the weapons are very satisfying, and I don't know how much I can say about a twin stick shooter. It's basically you're playing as Tesla, who has all sorts of combustion weapons, which I find a little bit disappointing. There's not as much electricity as I would have hoped. He doesn't have magnetic rail guns or anything, or he does, but much later in the game. But you're playing as Tesla. Your eldritch horrors have been unleashed on the Earth, and you're the only one who can shoot them down, it seems. And so you're shooting wave after wave of monster. You get cooler and cooler weapons as you go, and every time in every stage you can start collecting power-ups, but also like six parts of a robot. And once you got the six parts, you can choose to trigger a mech suit that is time limited, and that basically, like, like your health doesn't really matter anymore. You've got that shielding going on, and the mech has like these really powerful guns, and it's very satisfying. And then eventually it goes away, and you can start collecting the six parts again. I don't know how to sell this. It's a very simple game. Maybe look up the gameplay, Let's Play on the Nindy Spotlight Spotlight's channel. And Nindy Spotlight, I think, is run by a former writer of NWR.
Justin runs Nindy Spotlight.
Right, he wrote for the website, right?
Yeah. Justin Nation, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I think he's been making some cameos for us lately.
But that's where I saw most of the gameplay, and that's what kind of made me aware of the game, and so I suggest that people go check that out. We should also, maybe by the time that this podcast comes out, maybe NWR will have its own review. I'm not working on it. Someone else picked it up.
Yeah, it went up tonight, actually. The text one, anyway.
Oh. It's a pretty good game. Like, I've been playing it mostly solo. Tonight, I played a little bit co-op with Karen. She had never played a twin-stick shooter before, so it was a bit of a learning curve. But eventually, once she got used to the whole your aim is independent from your movement thing, We kicked some butt, but the stages are much harder when you're playing co-op, so it's not necessarily an advantage. And also the camera zooms out and zooms further overhead, whereas when you're playing co-op, the game is the camera's a little bit lower angled, so it makes it a little bit harder to see exactly what's going on. But it was still good fun.
Cool. Always down for a dual stick shooter. I would have expected, given the sheer number of indie games we've had, we would have seen more of them.
Right. Well, there's a lot of twin stick shooter likes. Like I mentioned, Neurovoider. There's a lot of those
Right.
that are kind of procedurally generated and that have sort of that kind of gameplay. But I don't know. They were not really what I was looking for. I was looking for something more like pure, simpler shooter, design. And finally, I got it.
There you go. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, that is going to do it for new business. When we come back, we will be doing listener mail, maybe with Mr. John Linden. Back. John's here.
I am. I have appeared.
Welcome, John.
It's good to be here, James.
It's good to have you. But you've been here for 21 seconds, so we'll see how that goes when we're about 10 minutes in.
It's going to be all upwards from here.
We've already discussed you debasing yourself publicly, so we're not super concerned about the pit. We're kind of moving up now,
I just wanted
hopefully.
to level set. It's what I wanted to do.
I appreciate kind of setting our place where we should start from so we can work our way towards the mountain. I'm not going to say the mountain, to the plateau. Really, just to sea level. I'm just gunning for sea level, John. That's all. Last week we were like in a trench somewhere. Today I'm going for just like, let's not drown.
Yeah, I mean, I just like to make sure that there's an appropriate level of candor on this podcast, James.
There was certainly candor. Oh, I'm glad you're here. This is where we do emails. We're not going to do emails right away, and I'll explain why in a minute. Because Nintendo did their, it's GDC this week. Nintendo did their annual indie video sizzle reel to kind of go with that. And a lot of these games were playable at GDC. It's where when you hear this. And so over at NintendoWorldReport.com, a site that John Lindemann used to manage, it's true.
It is a fact.
You sounded more incredulous about that than I did.
Manage is a what is managing, James?
Well, it's making sure blogs about booby statues don't get on the website. That's what managing is.
Well, then I failed the test.
This is true. Over at Nintendo World Report, we have video and I think we have impressions as well, covering a lot of these games. You can go see it. It's right there on the top of the page in the big image. Well, it's the big image right now as of 3/12/3/22. I don't know where it'll be after that, but it's out there. You can find it. It's all tied to our GDC coverage. But I kind of wanted to open up the floor a little bit to see if anybody wanted to talk about some of the stuff that they showed. A lot of these games were on other systems or have been announced for other systems or have been shown before in some form. But with the exception of The Messenger, I think there maybe there was one other one. This is the first time we've gotten confirmation of them coming to Switch.
Yeah,
And I guess I'll
I mean, I don't know how you want to classify Luminous, but
Yeah, I mean obviously it's the existence of the remaster was new.
Yes.
Even if the game it's well, I don't know. They made it sound like they're doing new music and stuff. So, I mean, is a new Tetris game just a port of old Tetris games, or is it a Tetris game? Is it new?
This is getting mighty, mighty philosophical.
Not in the slightest. So John, is there a game you're interested in talking about?
I didn't really follow it that closely. I kind of caught here and there on Twitter, but Luminous I thought was very interesting and completely out of left field. I never expected that game to be resurrected because, frankly, even though it's some sort of, I guess it would be a cult classic if any puzzle game can be considered a cult classic, I guess.
Sure.
And it's, but it, I don't think that game was particularly popular, aside from the fact that it was sort of one of the bigger games around the launch of the PSP.
Yeah, I feel
Guillaume
like a
said
lot.
exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of reviewers at that time kind of held it up as like the killer app for the PSP, and it seemed to be like especially the was the One Up show around back then? I
Yeah,
think it
it would have been.
was,
It would
and
have
so
been.
I think they talked about it there, but also I don't know. I was hanging out on IGN a lot, and there was kind of a different channels on IGN could lead to how can I say this? Fanboyery, kind of console war bullshit.
Like echo chamber.
Yeah, and so you had, you know, people licking PSPs for Sony and stuff like that on IGN, and
she worked for IGN, to be clear.
Well, eventually, but she licked the PSP before that. But anyway, it's not about her, actually. It's about, I think that they...
it's about others.
IGN did a lot to kind of stoke the fanboy wars, the console wars back then, and... well, so did a lot of publications. The DS was not really taken very seriously by a whole lot of people, and the PSP was supposed to be where it sat until, you know, eventually the DS found its footing and started giving us, like, hit after hit.
Yeah, well, one of the first, sort of games I remember being really kind of a big hit with the DS was Meteos, which was also like a Mizuguchi's company. Obviously, yeah. Sakurai was involved with it and all that, but that's... I kind of remember from that time. It was the sort of two strands of... they're Q Entertainment, are they? Because this Q Games is Dylan Cuthbert's...
They were Q Entertainment.
They were Q Entertainment, Mizuguchi's. They had two of the most kind of... Yeah, probably... I didn't tend to indulge in it myself, but I can imagine there was probably some sort of, head-to-head between those two going back and forth in those days.
Yeah, well, the thing... James Milkey, who did not at the time that Meteos or Luminous came out work at Q Entertainment, eventually worked there on Child of Eden and stuff like that. And I know he's always been pretty vocal, like, against Nintendo back in his days at 1UP. But also, like, as someone who worked at Q Entertainment, he tweeted something about only Nintendo games make money on Nintendo systems. And I'm guessing that maybe... was a reference to Meteos not really selling overly well and Luminous being a hit. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but I don't get the feeling that Meteos really got anywhere compared to Luminous.
Yeah, critically it did well. And I mean, I enjoyed it, and I'm sure a lot of people who did kind of pick up on it enjoyed it. But it was at a time where, after being pretty quiet on DS for the first several months, it got... Yeah, pretty busy pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it really was the first major DS game that I recall actually saying, wow, that looks really good and I want that. I mean, that and Ping Pals, but that's another story.
Fucking...
Come on. As for Luminous, I've got some version on PlayStation 3, and I didn't really get it, but I've been told that it's kind of a portable game.
Yeah.
The headphones and, like, kind of zone out.
Unless you were going to say no, don't know.
No. Zunes.
Microsoft does that. Yeah.
I don't know. Can you even do that anymore?
Some people still have their working Zunes.
Yeah, Luminous got a little surge because it was one of the maybe a launch game of the 360 arcade. Downloadable games.
Yeah, sounds about right.
It got a little surge from that. I think it was pre-installed on all Xbox 360 consoles at some point as, like, a demo version or something weird like that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's neat. It'll be fun on a Switch screen.
Yeah, I guess I've not played many of Mizuguchi's games myself, but it did. Even I'm kind of familiar enough to think, like, he's very enthusiastic about Force Feedback, so it's kind of a fit in that way, on Switch.
And it's been discussed, I think, in interviews that, yes, the preferred way to play Luminous on Switch would be to have additional controllers that you strap to your feet and arms and everything.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
It's got to be cool. You could just synthesize it with Labo somehow, and it could be spectacular.
Yeah. Well, that's the suit you have to wear to attach all the controllers to it.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good game. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'll probably pick it up, but, you know, it's...
Now, it sounds like the kind of thing I could really get into, even though I've not played any version of it previously.
Yeah, I mean it's good. I mean, but again, it's a puzzle game that is like a, like over a decade old. So
yeah, you know. I have very very intense noise canceling headphones, and that will be that's one of those games where it's gonna be I'm gonna be yelling because I can't I won't be able to hear after I've played it for an hour. But that's okay. It should be good. Guillaume, anything jumps out at you?
I guess Pode looked good, but it, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to rock anyone's world, but it seemed like a fun little co-op puzzle platformer thing. I don't know, where you control like some luminous round thing with eyes, and the other person controls a rocky, dark thing with eyes, and you cooperate. I don't know, I looked at the demo, the video on NWR, and it looked pretty much like what I expected. It looks nice. I mean, yeah, it looks nice. But I guess the game that did not really wow me in the Nindie Spotlight that I went afterwards to look at some footage of and it looked much better, that was Torturous, is the Messenger, the kind of the Ninja Gaiden kind of looking 8-bit game. And it just looks like a solid action game. Like it looked like it's got a lot of fun ideas in terms of presentation. Like the Nindie Spotlight highlighted the whole like switch between 8-bit and 16-bit graphics. But there seems to be more going on than that. Like on the NWR's video, like when you go underwater, the music suddenly sounds all underwatery. So lots of presentational touches, and it looks like also the gameplay is there. So I'm more excited to see it and play it now that I've seen some actual hands-on you know gameplay than I did when I saw the Nintendo video.
Greg?
Yeah, and the Messenger was the big one for me in terms of kind of caught my eye in the presentation, but it was really, again, that having seen kind of more of it in action. I mean, when you see it in the Spotlight video, it's kind of, okay, there's two different visual styles and all the kind of things that go with that, but what I've seen, you know, in the gameplay that we've got, the direct feed footage is, you know, kind of analogous kind of puzzle elements to what you might see in something like Skyward Sword in the desert, where you had those time shift like stones where, you know, the environment changed in a kind of fixed radius around this like sort of thing that was creating a, you know, a sort of distortion in time or whatever. But of course, in this case, the two different time periods are, you know, is not just like, okay, kind of, you know, the pristine and the ruined, which, you know, you kind of had in that case, but it's the 8-bit, 16-bit, and the music and everything is changing sort of dynamically with that. As we have got the, in terms of 16-bit, it's going for a, you know, a classic Genesis, you know, FM synth style, which makes sense because I mean, that's pretty, you know, the Shinobi soundtracks are kind of pretty yeah, well thought of as some of the earlier soundtracks on the Mega Drive or the Genesis that you know kind of use that sound hardware very well. I can't say is it something I have the most affection for, but you know it is effective when used properly, and you know it certainly seems so in this case. But you know in terms of gameplay, what you're seeing in the footage, you know, is situations where you kind of activate in these kind of bubbles of time distortion where you go in, and then if you know, when as that moves, it's revealing that in the other time period there's platforms in a particular place so you can actually, you know, traverse this particular expanse or whatever. So you know, it's a cool kind of you know, I think a lot of people probably one of the things they might remember from Skyward Sword as being cool, and it's really nice to see that kind of idea adapted and you know sort of put into action in a 2D space, but also you know with this very kind of you know get sort of introspective kind of meta kind of quality to it with a retro style game where you've actually got two aesthetics and time periods and hardware generations that it's drawing from.
For me, the takeaway, I mean, yeah, that game looks freaking gorgeous. For me, it was probably either, like, I've played Fantasy Strike. If you haven't played Fantasy Strike and you kind of want a fighting game that's easy to get into, that's a really good example of the genre. Because it's not about memorizing combos and stuff. And it's fun. It's a dumb, fun fighting game. Like, it's not dumb, but the character designs are gloriously stupid. But Pool Panic looks absolute chaos, like, in the most beautiful way possible. Playing a sentient cue ball, trying to defend against, like, it's such a dumb fucking thing that like watching the video of it, I was losing it. Like, I didn't watch it live. I was in a meeting, so I went after, actually had meetings stacked up until like 4 o'clock that day, so I went and watched it. I was like 4 in the afternoon. I'd avoided Twitter, I'd avoided the internet, and I pulled that video up. And, like, I got to that, and I just started giggling at my desk, because it was so dumb. It was the first thing in that video that just brought me to the point of, oh, that's coming on. Oh, that's, they're getting that, too. Oh, that's nice, too. What the fuck? What is this? It's really, really ridiculous and stupid, and I kind of dig it. And then West of Loathing, which I'd heard about. It's supposed to be really funny. We'll call it curious. I'll add that to the, like, I'm curious about this one list. But yeah, it maybe Bad North is kind of in the same boat where it looks interesting, but I need to see a hell of a lot more. Just wasn't a big thing. It was just, you know, a handful of games. It's not even all the games that got announced for Switch that day.
No, and more, I guess, people... if anybody was going into it expecting, like, a bunch of updates about stuff they've sort of spotlighted before, like Morphe's Law or Runner 3, right, or Shovel Knight, King of Cards, is it? The final title of the King Knight expansion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that wasn't the focus, so... or is it Yoku's Island Express, the pinball adventure thing?
Yeah,
I'm very interested in that, but, you know, we have heard about it before.
Yep, so we moved on to friggin' the Bomb Chicken, which I want to say we had heard about before, but maybe just I had heard about it before. I was like, no, they haven't talked about it before. I don't know. Instead, we got Pool Panic, which is just ridiculous looking. But yeah, I mean, if you want to see lots of direct feed. Because GDC, it's relatively straightforward to get direct feed at GDC compared to other events. You can go see that right now over at NintendoWorldReport.com. We have a ton of it. And big blocks of it, too. Like 12 minutes, 13 minutes of just direct feed from the games themselves. So if you want to see more information about any of these, you can go catch it there. I assume impressions as well, if not right now, will be going up from this point forward. But... on that, we're going to go ahead and get to some emails before we wrap the show up. John, I would like it if you would read Ty's email.
Certainly.
Not that Ty, I don't think.
All right. Ty writes, hello, RFN crew. I'm looking at the three new Atlas RPGs that are have been released recently, being Radiant Historia, Alliance Alive, and SMT Redux. I don't know which one to get. I'm a big RPG fan, but I've not played any of these three titles and don't know much about them. Which of them would you suggest, or is there a different 3DS RPG that you would suggest? Thanks, and keep up the great work.
The different one opens it up, because of those three, I don't have much of a hard decision to make.
You are
have
a fan of Radiant Historia, though, right?
Hmm. Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's why it's not difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I reviewed the original game and gave it this ascendant review. And the only reason I'm not playing Radiant Historia right now is A, I've got 15 days left of a service I already paid for, and B, I have another review game to play. With a hard deadline.
Yeah, and the thing I would say as well, I haven't played any of the kind of... I mean, in the case of, two of those, you've got DS originals. Radiant Historia and Strange Journey in the Shin Megami Tensei, or the forerunner of Alliance Alive, Legend of Legacy. But thing with the Radiant Historia remake is it does sound like, first of all, yeah, the game's got a great reputation. I played the demo, the music sounds great. You know, there's a lot to like about it in prospect, but also the fact that, you know, kind of one of the things that was cited about it originally was the kind of very crunchy kind of battle system, and the fact that, you know, you do have an easy mode now where, you know, I guess if you didn't find it to your taste, you could play through it in this more visual novel style. Gives it, you know, a bit more flexibility, but the only downside with that is that I think you can switch difficulty mid playthrough. So right. Yeah, you know, you'd have to think about that a little bit.
Well, I think if you take it down, you can't.
It's a one-time thing. Back up. It's a one-time thing. Yeah.
I get that. I mean, if you're gonna tune it all the way down, then you know it is what it is. You know, you're there. This is your home now. Peasants. I actually think you're selling yourself short if you don't give that game's battle system a time to start to work, because it is complicated and it could be a pain in the ass, and sometimes those fights are needlessly convoluted or long in some cases. But there's a lot of cool stuff that battle system has baked into it that you might miss if you just go like, I'll just switch it to easy and just cruise through the story. And a lot of work clearly went into designing that game's battle system. And the people who made that game went on to make other famous games, including such fine bangers as Tokyo Mirage Session Sharp FE. So there you go. Pedigree.
That's another one I wouldn't mind playing. I've not done so.
That's got to get a Switch port at some time,
you
right?
You would have thought so.
Yeah.
Maybe it sold so bad that they're not even going to bother. Maybe it Wonderful 101.
Yeah, that one. I think it's Wonderful 101 could really use with just... Because like Bayonetta, those two games got ported as is. You know, they weren't changed, right, really. But like Wonderful 101 would need some adapting from the gamepad kind of center, although I always just use the sticks anyway. I never use the drawing mechanic, but you know, there's some sections where it was using the sort of dual display thing and all that. So it needs some adapting, but at the same time, it could just polishing up, like it's ironing out, like it would benefit from that. So yeah, but at the same time, it did sell really badly. I mean, so yeah. You do wonder whether they would think it'd be worthwhile. And yeah, I mean, Sharp FE got the short end of the stick by being so late with Wii U as well. I mean, probably might not have been the biggest hit under any circumstances, but the ship had sailed big time.
It did sell real bad, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not what we're being asked here. Is there other... Like, I mean, I've played SMT Strange Journey. I've played Radiant Historia, the original mix, or whatever you want to call it.
imperfect chronology.
There we go. And I played the predecessor to Alliance Alive, and I played the demo, which is out there for Alliance Alive. I mean, my vote is hard on the first, but are there other 3DS RPGs out there that kind of hit maybe not necessarily like this is the best 3DS RPG, but are unique?
Have you heard about Etrian Odyssey? Yeah. It's this little franchise that I
a robot to. Makes it every day.
Yeah, no, I just my I think my tastes have shifted from kind of more traditional JRPG with you know, emphasis on story or characters, to like dungeon crawler, which is a pretty old school way of doing RPGs, you know, like wizardry and stuff like that. But it's made more accessible with all the niceties that you would expect from a modern game. And Etrian Odyssey is like, you know, it's made even more accessible on the 3DS than it was on the DS. I don't know where I'm going with this. Anyway, I've talked about it enough.
I get this Persona Q as well. It's just, you know, it's a similar kind of game.
Yeah, I did not really fall in love with that, and it doesn't...
If you really like those characters, then sure.
Maybe, but Teddy is more obnoxious in Persona Q than he was in Persona 4. But it seems like he's been more obnoxious in all the spinoffs of Persona.
That's pretty much where he is now. I mean, he was always obnoxious, so it's not like they went and took this great character and made him obnoxious. They just sort of leaned into it a little bit.
A little bit, I guess. They've decided, like, oh yeah, it's funny when our teddy bear character is horny. Let's just make him horny all the time. And anyway, I'm not a fan. I'm playing right now The Alliance Alive. We got a code through Nintendo World Report, and James was nice enough to cede it to me. Like, we were both planning to play this game, and anyway, I got editor's dibs, so thank you, James. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, by the time this podcast comes out, the embargo will not be up, so I can't really say anything about it. But I'm a little bit, you know, I'm a few hours past the point where the demo ends, and I can say I think that the demo gives you a pretty good idea of what the full game is like.
So if you like the demo, then you're probably fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Dragon Quest VIII on 3DS. I haven't played it. It's really good. All indications are it's a very, very good game. But of course, that's a Dragon Quest game, so that's going to be a definite, you know, your mileage may vary. Devil Survivor 2 was supposed to be really good. Also came out on 3DS. Again, Atlas.
Oh, that was like... the first one was Overclocked. Is that also...
Yeah. Overclocked is Devil Survivor 1's remake. Devil Survivor 2 came out on DS... And then came out on 3DS, and I want to say
really
like,
late on DS, wasn't it? The
I want to say it came out like the same time Overclocked, the remake of 1, came out on 3DS. Because I had a review copy of 1, and somebody had the other, and it was like, wait, what? What are you guys doing? And of course, SMT4. If Atlas is sort of your jam.
I really like that one, but again, you can go and listen to me talk about it in earlier episodes, and there are a few sticking points. The first Shin Megami Tensei 4 has kind of design issues where if you've got a side quest active and you come to a certain point in the progressing the story where the game will actually kind of put up a wall that prevents you from continuing further. And it tells you that if you want to go on, you have to abandon the quest that you're on. And when that happens, you always have to say yes, because actually, usually most of the time, the what you're looking for to finish your quest that you're on is on the other side of that wall. And it's just like this, it's really weird. But, I don't know. I still really enjoyed it. It's got a good combat system. It's got a pretty good, like an interesting world to explore. And, I enjoyed it overall, but it's got a few design issues.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't played it, and it sold a butt ton of copies, there's a pretty good chance you did. In spite of its infamous back end, Bravely Default is still a really, really good game. Hmm. If you're looking for like retro-ish JRPG stuff, it's still kind of best of breed on 3DS.
Yeah, I mean, Bravely Second's less repetitive.
It is, but I think Bravely Second, if you've played Bravely Default and didn't play Bravely Second, and it did not sell a butt ton of copies, that's entirely possible. If you liked Bravely Default, except for the back end stuff, I think Bravely Second... A clears that shit up. I think the cast feels a little bit like cast from a fan fiction with self-insert characters.
That's not a throwaway comment. He's right about that.
Especially the two new ones, like
the
they
one
really
called
feel...
You. Yeah. You kind of felt that way.
Yeah, and then they just created his like sprightly girlfriend character and threw her in there too, just because he's a popular guy. But it's still a really good game.
No, I mean, it's less repetitive, even though it reprises a bunch of stuff from one. You know, and the job system is even more jobs and more flexibility.
There's so many jobs!
I think if you don't care about story too much, just go to the second one. You're better off. You know, and I mean, it will do, you know, it will kind of fill you in on some of the backstory or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's probably a little bit weaker kind of narratively and all that, but if you were playing that fresh and you having not seen any of the first game in of the two, then you're talking about a lot of content and a really kind of meaty and kind of enjoyable to experiment with job system that I took to very much.
Yeah, see, I would still go for the first, just because even not even a story, I just liked the characters better. And you're going to spend a lot of time with them regardless of which game you play.
I could say, I mean, I think they probably are better characters, but I still didn't like them that much, so it's not a big deal for me.
Fair enough. I lost my favorite idiot character in the transition, so... and the music is so much better in the first game.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. Although they reuse some, but yeah.
They reuse some, but the character themes in the first game are so good.
It's amazing, that soundtrack.
It really is. And it's a shame. I would love for us to get a sequel to that game, but eh. But,
well, you know, I mean, Octopath, it might fill that to some extent.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a sequel, you know, delivering all those ways, but you know, hopefully
two does quite cleanly end, like, hey, by the way, there's a sequel coming, but you're like, no, there's not, you don't, there's not happening. But if you play both of those games, then yeah, go play Raiden Historia. It's really good. Even if they did anime the shit out of it this time, it's still, you can buy the good, better art as DLC. Fuck you, Atlas.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that. That is remarkable. That's absolutely remarkable.
That's extortion. They made the art worse.
We're holding it hostage.
They made the art worse and then put a price on its head.
Yeah, hey, Atlas has gotten pretty grabby with DLC lately. In Etrian Odyssey 5, in the past two untold remakes of Etrian Odyssey, you could switch between the new orchestration and a FM synth version of the soundtrack. And here you have to pay to buy to download the FM synth version,
which is Yuzo Koshiro's like preferred medium, isn't it? So
yeah.
There's a reason why you might want to do that.
The original write up for the DLC in this game, it sounded like the item that you can buy in DLC. There's an item you can buy that lets you gain experience faster, which is really kind of shady in and of itself. It sounded like it was expendable and you'd have to buy it to use it again. Like, you have to just keep buying it. They course corrected later and said, no, that's not what we meant. But I wonder if that is entirely what they meant, and they got so many incredulous press requests, they just changed course. Because this was back when they announced the game for Japan. Like, it seemed pretty clear that that's what they meant. It's still a really good game, even if it has cruddy art, but, you know, you could just Google the old art and look at that instead and just imagine. All right. I'm going to skip reading emails myself. Guillaume.
Yeah?
Would you care to read Jonathan's email?
Sure. Jonathan writes, so, with WiiWare shutting down, I was reminded of my personal favorite story about the service. The year was 2009. You could finally find a Wii on store shelves, and not a moment too soon, because Rock Band had likely invaded a living room near you. That summer, Pepsi did a promotion to give away downloadable Rock Band songs using codes underneath the bottle caps. Now, I don't know if you're aware, but the online infrastructure of Nintendo's consoles hasn't always been as robust and featured as it is right now. There was once a time when it was seen as poor and threadbare of functionality.
What?
Yeah, that's what he says.
Amazing.
I'm just reading.
This is news to me.
I don't remember that.
So as a compromise to host a promotion on the Wii, they merely made codes that gave you points for the value of Rock Band song, since they couldn't just gift you a song straight away. Unscrupulous types like me, who maybe weren't interested in a rock band song, could take those caps, each worth $2 in Wii points, and spend them on anything we wanted to. My roommate at the time was heard to lament that it's too bad a promotion will be over before football season, or we could go around the stadium afterwards and just clean up empty bottles. The Division One.
Yep, Division One.
The Division One university in town had a contract with Pepsi for all their beverage needs. So the 80,000 seat stadium was littered with bottles every Saturday in the fall. Enter Larry the Cable Guy. For those of you who aren't familiar with Mr. the Cable Guy's work, don't worry about it.
Mr. the Cable Guy.
But all you need to know is that he planned a giant stand-up comedy show in the very stadium we would have loved to loot after a football game. Tickets were $4, because I suspect the spectacle was more important than revenue for this event. So 50,000 people showed up. My roommate and our girlfriends spent 20 minutes or so picking up caps afterwards, until security guard kicked us out. And we netted $120 in Wii points each. For one evening, paltry online functionality and low-hanging fruit comedy joined together, and we shot WiiWare like kings.
Thanks, Larry the Cable Guy.
And thus, the only time anyone has ever thanked Larry the Cable Guy comes into play.
Yeah, and the thing is, we're
going to get some email like, he does great things for charity. We're like, oh shit, I'm sorry.
I think Larry the Cable Guy would actually really appreciate this story. That's the irony of it. Hmm. You know?
Mr. the Cable Guy to you, John.
Sorry, Lawrence.
Sir Lawrence the Cable Guy?
OBE.
Please, the cable man was my father.
I'm Dr. the Cable Guy, thank you. I didn't go to 16 years of cable doctor school to be Mr. Jesus Christ, we're already off the path, aren't we?
I have never done something like this. I'm trying to think if I've ever like been able to game anything online of this type. This isn't an exploit. It's just a
It's a life hacks. This is lifehacks.com.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty sweet that they converted.
Lifehacks.com brought to you by hashtag Monster Energy Drink.
Yeah. It is pretty sweet that they allowed, straight conversion to Wii points. You know,
that's pretty good.
That is
like,
pretty sweet.
I get why they did it. Mm-hmm. But the easy answer would have been to just say, sorry, Wii owners. But I guess the Wii was in such a market position that they kind of had to.
Yeah. It made sense because they really wanted to get that game out there in as many hands as possible and sell as many crappy plastic instruments as they possibly could.
that Pacific current that's trapping all the plastic crap is full of Wii Rock Band guitars.
Uh-huh.
In Canada, we did not have the bottle caps thing, I don't think. Or if we did, I missed it, but what we did have was that Kellogg, I think, had basically you could buy one of their cereals, and you would have either a $5, $10, or $20 point code, Wii point code in it, and so basically you know, like that was more than the price of the cereal itself. So I just, you know. Basically, I got paid in Wii points for doing something that I would have done anyway, which is eat. So it was a pretty sweet promotion, and I kind of wish that you know, I had used it even more. I mean, like, eventually I ran out of those codes, and I kind of cursed myself for it.
In retrospect, you just didn't eat enough.
Joke's on you, Kellogg's. I plan to eat all along.
Mm-hmm. How do you like me now? Eating and shit.
You're playing my hands.
That is the order, John. Eat and then shit. Yes, yeah. You have correctly identified the order of life.
Life hack. God. Eating.
Hack or no hack? Confirmed.
Yep,
hack. So But they got a TV show, so what the fuck are we making fun of? All right, so the closest I have is I did a bunch of, like, volunteer work, and Coke, I think they still do it, actually. Coke has codes on products you can exchange for reward points, like it's fucking tobacco products in the early 90s.
Yep.
And, like, they brought in, you know, 12-pack, like, the cases, the can cases, 12 or 16s, I can't remember what's in them. And those were, like, 400 points. Like, a crazy number. And I just had to open those. And so the bottle caps had them too, but it was like 100 points each. And I would just open them and set them out. It's just a piece of cardboard. So Coke at some point moved towards, and in fact, I think they both did, because I think both Coke and Pepsi use the same paper provider. The cardboard container is also like the storage for the cans. So you just pop a little corner off and then take them out, and they just sort of roll down to the front of the box. So it's like a little caddy. I just had to set those up at this place I was volunteering for stuff, and I would just rip the cardboard part off, because that was what I was supposed to do. And instead of just throwing it out, I just took the things with me.
Yep.
And then just entered them in when I got home. And I was bringing in like 3,000 or 4,000 points every time I volunteered. The problem is, unlike this and what Guillaume had, the exchange rate fucking sucked on these things. Because they knew the volume they were giving codes out in.
Yeah, and they also throttle how many you can enter per day, correct?
Oh, no, they didn't fucking care.
They do that now.
Yeah, they do that now. Because of people like me.
Yep.
But, like, you were getting nothing. So I was getting, like, a $10 Amazon gift card every 12 times I volunteered or something absurd like that. So the exchange rate did not quite work out in my benefit.
Yep.
Because that volunteering was moving like 20 cases of soda and a bunch of food and stuff. So the physical labor's far outstripped that exchange rate.
Mm-hmm.
But given that I was mostly being voluntold to do this, you know, I had to be there anyways. At least I tried to feel like I was getting something out of the experience rather than enriching my social perspective on life. I was instead silently seething and trying to find ways to make money. It's getting ahead in life, really. I was just doing what this country's founded on.
Yep. Capitalism, baby.
Oh, yeah. It's rock solid foundation of just, I'm going to make money even when I'm trying to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck helping people.
Yep.
I think I bought some really shitty game that I talked about on the show here with that and was really disappointed. So, like, the final payoff was like Battalion Wars Wii.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the end state for that particular – the credit that I accrued through this volunteer process. So
justice,
basically
– justice was served, I would say.
What, cosmic justice?
Cosmic justice, I would say, yeah, yeah.
So I volunteered to gain a copy of Battalion Wars Wii and then for the purposes of providing content for Nintendo World Report, where someone else got a copy and just fucking sold it. So,
yeah, I don't think I wasn't thinking of that. Yeah.
Was that the transitive property of cosmic justice?
I guess so. I guess so. Justice, Jesus, I think, has yet Christ to be served in that case. But however, don't, you know, I haven't forgotten. I know you're out there.
Are you going to go hunt him down?
Yeah, don't say you know where he lives.
Technically, I do.
By technically, he does. He means he's outside his window right now.
Yep. I'm podcasting from inside the house.
God damn it. I
think of John sort of like Inspector Gadget superior just in all these ridiculous places where an explosive message would be really unfortunate. That,
yep.
Just that's where he likes to podcast from, inside a vase, you know, that kind of thing.
Behind a curtain. Yeah.
In the dirt of a potted plant with the tree on his head when he comes out.
Yep.
We need to move on. I don't know where we're going
so
with this
ways.
Email, so let's
it's so many
that's
ways,
the time
James.
To Greg, I can't have you read this email because you're actually in this email. So
okay, yeah, two weeks. I don't like talking to myself either.
Doug writes, I moved to London too. Doug actually wrote us a big expansive email. He had a lot of questions. We weren't sure how we were going to be doing on time at this point, so we went ahead and picked one of the easier ones to answer. We'll be a little more expansive than the scope of this question. Doug writes, I moved to London 2 years ago, and I'm stunned at how horrible the retro game scene here is. Paris is stunning. Greg, defend your kind.
Yep. Well, it's not going to be a very spirited defense. Right?
Why is this, Greg? Is this because the PC scene was so much bigger than consoles over there?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really... The first thing to say is I'm not very well educated on it because, as we've discussed before, you know, we imported, in the old days. So the machines that I've still got that still work, you know, like Super Famicom, N64, that kind of thing, I've always been dealing in games that aren't domestic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in terms of, you know, am I ever going to go to some, you know, like retro fair where people are like bringing their stuff in and all that? Probably not, because most of it's going to be European. I can't use it. I've never really availed myself of the retro scene in this country that much. I mean, there's, you know, good retro game shops that specialize in imported games here. I've used them, but, you know, I don't know whether that's really the kind of thing you're talking about, you know, just go to, you know, the capital city and just walk into a shop or something. That's never what I've done. It's always been kind of online or before that, mail order, the good old days. That's how all the mm-hmm. stuff got imported, was from shops around the country, not really in particularly major cities, that specialized in that sort of thing. And so, yeah, you know, for me, the indigenous or retro scene has not been of any great interest, so I'm not in a real position to defend it, and certainly not in a position to compare it to Paris. I've not been on any buying trips over there either for like Master System games or whatever. Yeah. That's generally what one does in the City of Light, as I understand it. The other thing I would say, which John alluded to, is, you know, this isn't the best place for Nintendo kind of history. You know, the UK's kind of historically been a bit of a problem market for Nintendo relative to other places, because it had its own indigenous PC kind of scene, you know, the Spectrum and all that kind of stuff, and moving on to more advanced personal computers eventually, although the Spectrum had an inexplicably kind of long life. Well, to me, you know, I mean, I was a bit young, I suppose, for the Spectrum. And, you know, my brother, you know, who got me into Nintendo and all that, you know, it, to me, Spectrum was a byword for shite. Cheap shit. But obviously that was not the general perception in this country because it was very popular. That you have that kind of heritage, and then you've got the strong Sega heritage. You know, the Master System did relatively well here. The Mega Drive did relatively well here. I'm sure there are plenty of kind of avenues to get Nintendo retro things here. You know, I'm not saying there aren't, but like I say, I'm not the best position to evaluate it, given, you know, like I said, I haven't got much interest in European games, not least because, you know, reiterate what we said before, they were literally inferior, they ran slower, they were borders, you know, I mean, you know, they were not as the creators intended them most of the time.
So they're saying that they were the For Glory version of video games.
With your For Glory antipathy, honestly. I've played many matches of For Glory, and you know, I've won far fewer of them. But, you know, it can be fun. It's, you know, it's, there's no need to be mean about it. I mean, I like much Smash Brothers.
It can't be fun. It's in the title.
No, you know. Like I said, I like my Smash Brothers silly, but there's, you know, one-on-one or, you know, straight up fighting has a place. Not just for people who are very good at the game, which I certainly am not. That's my perspective on it as best I can. I don't know whether we've got any listeners who've got a better knowledge of the retro scene here. I'm sure, you know, that could speak to it in more detail. I can imagine other countries in Europe, even being a better sort of well of Nintendo retro stuff specifically because they had greater sort of attachment, greater kind of affinity for those generations of Nintendo hardware than we did here. And even last today, I think Switch, if you look at how it's doing well in Europe in general, but whereas it's kind of like setting records in certain countries on the continent, it isn't here. And it's been record setting in America too, hasn't it?
Yep.
So there is a sort of historical kind of path dependency, seemingly. It does all kind of go back to the for whatever reason. You could also put it down to Nintendo's own, how they handled this market. It hasn't been perfect over the years, but just not quite as much love as other places for Nintendo. But obviously, there are many of us who do. I am one such example.
Mm-hmm. I've always wondered why Sony is so popular in the UK.
I know it is. I mean, we talked about that. I mean, it with the PlayStation specifically, how quickly that became mm-hmm. extremely popular, which is why you have those mega sales of the Crash compilation. Because there is so much kind of affection for that phase of the PlayStation. It didn't take that long to catch on over. It was really, really big, really, really early. I would assume it was because Sony just treated the market sort of more professionally than anybody had done before.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that might be being a little bit unkind to Sega and Nintendo, but I think there was a feeling of like, okay, somebody's actually gonna really do it. They're really gonna get there. So you're gonna have a platform holder that's got their act together when it comes to this market, and it paid off big time. They had some of the right kinds of games, sports games, Wipeout, racing, that was very big, as well as Crash and all that. So yeah, I mean, it's been very Xbox struggles a lot in Europe. The UK is the best country for Xbox, I think, relative to the rest of the continent.
Yeah. So the other issue was that Sony was, as a brand, was already quite big there.
Yeah. Exactly. And also that Nintendo and Sega weren't as big, arguably, as they were in other right. places, so it was easier for their brand recognition to kind of crush them.
Yeah. So I do know a little bit about, even though I've never been to London, I know a little bit about the scene in and around the area, just because of stuff that I pick up from Twitter and people tweeting stuff and finds and things.
This is a sad fact, isn't it? You know more about my country because you're on social media.
Well,
ordinarily, I say that's a sad fact. Increasingly, I think that's how I like it.
But I mean, to some degree, it's because I'm looking for stuff around me, and I get caught up in sort of a cross pollination of news.
Yeah.
The London Games Market, I think, runs once, three times a year. It's big, and they have lots of stuff, and it's a game. I mean, it's a market, it's a flea market, effectively, for video games, but there's a certain amount of conness to it. I don't mean con as in like you're being conned. I mean in that it's like people are around, it's a lot of people, so there is a certain amount of energy around that. I don't think there are any big conventions, though, in London proper, probably because of cost more than anything.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
I know there are some cons in there, in that area, but I don't think there's any really this is the con for this region. In terms of retail, I know only know a little bit because of the podcast Retro Asylum. I believe one of them runs a shop in Essex called The Retro Hunter, which sells, I know it sells a lot of stuff. And occasionally I see their stuff cross my feed. It's like, I found this there. It's like, oh, okay. And at some point I followed them for a while just because they were finding weird shit and I was amused by it. How I dealt with this around me. So, I mean, I live in a mid-sized city. It's beneficial to me that there's a major university with, 40,000 students in the heart of the city. So there are, boutique gaming stores and conversation stuff happening. But the problem is I've gotten older. You know, I'm now 10 years older than when I graduated. The games that the kids in that university now are retroized for are games I was playing on this podcast. So there's a certain amount of like, ah, well, I already own this game. And I've owned this game for 10 years. So this isn't really retro to me. Almost certainly, there is a boutique store somewhere near you that may not have great selection. I mean, they'll have stuff, but they may not have great stuff that you're looking for. But, you know, I've got two that I hit up whenever I'm down there. One's in a shopping district that I go to for lunch on Thursdays because I'm working from home. And I always just kind of poke my head in there and see what they've got. And then another is a little more out of the way. I have to actually make a trip of it. So I maybe go once a month. I become aware of stuff there. Like, I talk to people and, like, I became aware of one shop because the other one told me it existed. Like, hey, there's this. I talked to them enough. They're like, yeah, another store's opening down the street. I gave them a month. And that's kind of like, there were others that he was right on and they lasted about a month. And I got some pretty fucking sick deals out of there. But keeping an eye on that, if you're just looking to buy stuff, the internet's going to be your safest bet almost always. Mm-hmm. Now, you're never going to get a steal on the internet. Not anymore. Because people have price alerts out there. You just won't do it. It will not happen. But you're also never going to get absolutely taken on the internet because you have all the tools necessary to confirm what you're doing. If you are looking for events and opportunities to interact with people around the retro games, besides the gaming market, which, as I said, is still sales-oriented, some of those shops, some shops like that do give you the opportunity to kind of get a little bit of that. Like, they host event nights and stuff. And, you know, I haven't done a whole lot of those, but to some degree I've done a little bit of that. But in general, you're going to have more luck at a con, and it's okay if you have to travel for a con. You know, if there's not a big one in London, I just don't think there is. I don't think there's a PAX equivalent.
EGX, I guess. I looked that up, and that's a big game show there. But
yeah, but EGX is more oriented towards like new stuff.
Yeah,
it's not quite like the biggest thing about PAX is that while there is a big dumb section for like here's all the new games that are coming out, and here's Warframe here for the third year in a row, and in the infamous example of me hunting down Tiburon cards for you that year, John. Like, that's this is the current stuff. Most of PAX is off the floor.
Yeah.
It's the events going on the side. I don't know that EGX has that. It might. But even then, EGX is in Birmingham, I think.
Yeah, it's in Birmingham and London, apparently. But, I mean, it's actually, that's EGX Resd, which is the indie one, I think. That's what's in London.
So, an indie event, there may be more stuff going on around it. But yeah, keep an eye on those events. Look at stuff going on in universities. There's a ton of universities in that area. I bet they have events, like clubs and stuff that are into that stuff have events, and they have Facebook pages and Twitter accounts where they're going to post about stuff going on in those areas. It's not necessarily these things don't happen. It's that they probably don't happen at scale. So there's probably not big, giant events going on. If you're just looking for places to buy stuff, you know, you can get deals at boutiques. You're not getting them online. But just going into those stores will get you opportunities to find out about stuff. Like I said, the games market, you probably won't get steals, but you almost certainly won't get taken. Just be careful. But if you're looking for opportunities to kind of converse and talk with people about stuff, you know, you may have to travel a little bit if you want to do it at scale, have a big event. But it's worth it. You know, I think if I lived in the town with PAX, I don't think I would have enjoyed as much, because getting out into another town and kind of making a little bit of a vacation out of it, you know, finding some people to travel there with and going out on the town a little bit after, I mean, granted, PAX never actually closes, but going out on the town a little bit makes it more of an experience. Like, I don't go to, I can't remember what the one at the National Waterfront is. I'm blanking on it now. But there's a big games expo outside DC, but I live outside DC, so I don't go to it. I could go there and stay at home. I wouldn't need to get a hotel room. It's just the appeal of that's not quite there in the same way. No matter where you live, we are fortunate that this hobby has reached such a point and that preservation was on the minds of people who came before us, or now getting to our point, in our minds. That no matter where you live, you have access to some of this. You may have to travel a little bit, like if you live out in a really relatively rural place. But with the internet, you can find stuff. You can find where events are happening. They may not be big events that you hear about on message boards. People are excited about them with like countdowns in their email, in their handles on like freaking Resetera, or they may not be things that like Giant Bomb goes and does live shows from. But you know, you can find information about them from local clubs and like college organizations and stuff who are promoting them, and just kind of like, hey, we're going to, you know, Minneapolis Games Con, which is something I made up, it may very well exist, on June 6th. Mm-hmm. Let us know if you're coming. And, like, you may not need to go with them, but now you know it exists.
Yeah, there's a lot of smaller cons out there nowadays.
Yeah, and you could just kind of, like, keep your ears open for that no matter where you live. You might have to make a trip. You may have to make a weekend out of it. But, you know, that I would love to go make a weekend out of California Extremes. Like,
yeah,
it's
really cool.
It's a ways out of the way, but like, I get to go see like 200 old arcade games. Great.
Yep.
That would be super awesome.
Yeah.
I only know about California Extremes, although Jeff Gerstmann talks about it a lot now. I found out about it from like a Facebook post where somebody's like, I'm going to California Extremes this weekend. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And yeah, it sounds like a really dumb, awesome thing to do. Which is a lot of way of saying, like, man, the internet's your friend. I bet there's something out there you haven't found yet.
Yeah.
No matter who you are, no matter where you live, there's something.
Yep. This just in. If you're into something nerdy, the internet, probably pretty good.
It tells you where it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Social media especially.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's how you kind of get it passively, right?
Right. That's how you, like, establish those links to things that are close to you. So for you, or for our writer here, for Doug, like finding people on Twitter or Facebook who are in that scene in London, they're going to post about when they're going to a big event on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Or they might retweet it, you know, just to get exposure, right?
Yeah, or it's just because they're excited.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they kind of become conduits. So, like, you know, somebody will say, hey, can, you know, because you have a following, can you retweet this con that's going on in my area? There you go.
Yeah. Or just a matter of just, like, telling their friends, like, hey, you guys, I'm going to go. You guys get coming?
Yep.
Like, it's, you become aware of these things happening on the periphery as a consequence. And then you start to have the opportunity to go look at, you know, go look at those events and see if you want to go to them.
Another reason why I am particularly ill-placed to mount a defense of London's retro scene.
Fair enough.
I'm not privy to any such connections.
Yeah. But, you know, they're out there. You just got to dig out and find them.
God damn it, Cambridge Analytica didn't get my data, so who's really better off?
It's true. They probably still did. They probably have some other.
At the least, they have a shadow profile of you. So.
Yeah, well, there were a bunch of fake ones, weren't there? I mean,
mm-hmm. One of them's still active sometimes. It's weird.
Yep.
I mean, like 80% of me is like, that's fake, and then 20% is like, is Greg just long playing us right
now?
Yeah,
I mean, you never know, do you?
Yeah, I mean, really, never. You could probably make a pretty accurate profile out of the fake Greg Leahy Twitter accounts out there. You know,
what I'm waiting for is the day where it tweets exact quotes from the episode before it goes live. And then I'm like, wait a minute.
Tempting me to like feed them.
It's like, so this is one of us now. But is it real? It's not me, I don't think. It's going back to our conversation that happened off the air about not knowing that you're the bad guy. But we're now referencing things that didn't happen in the show, which means it's time to end the show. If you have emails, please. Well, I mean, you have email. If you have questions, please send them to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We are answering hyper-specific questions about where you can buy video games in a city that some of us have never even been to. You send us your questions. Send them. We've got like 6 Smash Brothers questions in the last week, and they're all kind of variants on the same thing. Help us out, please.
For the record, James, my heart is in Gay Perry, all right?
I'm glad to hear that. Jesus.
Yes.
Ah! All right. It's time to end the show. Greg, what do we got?
Well, yeah, so our music request this week ties in not to the closure of the Wii Shop channel, which we already kind of did a musical tribute to when that was kind of first announced. Something else is ending just a few days after this episode goes out. In Japan, they're ending the Street Pass Relay service, where you kind of had those kind of Street Pass like hubs where you'd get a whole bunch of the hits at once. And in Europe, at the same time, they're ending the Nintendo Zone service, which was not only had the Street Pass Relay kind of a point attached to them, but like free Wi-Fi that you could get on with your 3DS and see promotional stuff. And I think they did some distribution of like, you know, a special Pokemon that way or something. So, yeah, it's all part of the 3DS wind down process, which it seems maybe quite protracted at this point, but it's ongoing nonetheless. And so MASB wanted us to kind of recognise that in musical form. And so we have the theme for Find Me here, or I think it was called Street Pass Quest elsewhere, because as we've covered with WiiWare, at sort of end of the last decade, beginning of this one, they never wanted to call anything the same thing across regions. But yeah, a fun little throw. I haven't thought about this component of Street Pass for a very long time. But there was a time when I did worry about, like, oh, have I got anyone of the right colour to light up this room or whatever?
You know, oh, God.
It's kind of disturbingly retro, actually. So enjoy the memories, everyone.
Nintendo learned SEO sometime in the last 5 years. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Au revoir.
God damn it.
Bye-bye.